Hello there, welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. Well, here we are, Italy European champions, a penalty shootout win at Wembley after a 1-1 draw after 90 minutes and extra time. We're joined today, as ever, by James O'Toole. We'll also be hearing from Mark Rossiter, Guy Swindles and Stephen Elliott. But James, first of all, how are you? The morning after the night before, we're recording this on a Monday morning, you had tipped England to go all the way and they came up just short.
Yeah, they came up short. It was a good tournament for them, in fairness. I know a lot of people said it should have been a good tournament considering how many games they had at home. Very little leaving the country, only once to Rome, I think, is the only time they actually left Wembley for a match. But do you know what? Overall, Adrian, I think it was a very, very good tournament for many, many reasons. And they just, as you said, came up short last night on penalties once again. And heartbreak, penalties, Gareth Southgate, they seem to go hand in hand, really, don't they?
Okay, well, quite a turnaround by the Azzurri, who failed to qualify for the World Cup in Russia just a few short years ago. Now kings of Europe. Here's some of the late drama from the Wembley final of the Euro 2020.
So they're making their substitutions. Jordan Henderson, second time Gareth Southgate has substituted a substitute. Rashford for Henderson, Sancho for Walker.
I believe you can do all the practice you want in training, but nothing can ever replicate what's happening here tonight. How big this is for every player who walks up there. And good luck to them all. Daunting.
And now it's Marcus Rashford on the pitch. A couple of minutes only before it's his turn to take the penalty. Luke Shaw can barely watch. Oh my goodness me. After all that, off the post and away. So Bernardeschi steps up to the mark. He was successful in the shootout as the fourth penalty taker against Spain. He's now the fourth penalty taker against Jordan Pickford. 2-2. And he's shaped to take it one way and put it the other. And it's 3-2 Italy. Well, this is a moment for young Jadon Sancho. A man with bundles of confidence. But to be put in this position. And Donnarumma saves! Jorginho against Jordan Pickford for the European Championship. And Pickford saves it! And England is still alive! Bukayo Saka has got a pick to take. If he gets it, it goes to sudden death. If he misses, Italy are champions. And Donnarumma wins the title for Italy. And after 53 years, they're champions of Europe again.
Ah, yes, penalties. Brilliant when you win, heartbreaking if you lose. Guy Swindles has been with us right throughout the tournament. Guy, I was actually thinking of you last night. I was thinking, what am I going to say to Guy in the morning? How are you today? How are England, how are the people of England feeling today?
Kind of quiet, really. It's oh, here we go again. I guess the fact that it came to penalties, that almost had to happen. The fact that we had to lose on penalties, that almost had to happen. But I think it's weird. Yes, if England had won it, the place would be going berserk and it would be fantastic. But I don't think, because the way the England team have deported themselves and played through the tournament, there's far less incrimination than perhaps we've had with past tournament defeats. So, there's kind of, oh, here we go again, but there are positives to take from it. And that seems to be the attitude.
And what are the positives, in your view?
Well, as a football team, I think that they were the second best in the tournament. And when you consider the teams in Europe at the moment, that's a pretty good place to be. I think Gareth Southgate has proved that he is a very capable international manager. I think there are some young players coming through who are only going to get better. We heard two of them miss penalties there. But with Sancho, with the likes of Saka really stamping a claim in this tournament, there are an awful lot of positives to take from that. Off the pitch, when the thing started, we had politicians bleating about players taking the knee. By the end, they were tweeting, please don't put racist tweets out. So we've actually seen a bit of a return to decency as well on the back of this fascinating team. So I think there have been some huge positives socially. as well as on the sporting front. And well played, Italy. I thought over the 120 minutes, they were the better team after England were the best for the first 45. But there are some positives to take from this. And already we're talking about the World Cup next year and thinking we've got half a chance at that.
OK, we'll come on to the broader aspects of it all. But let's just focus in on the match, shall we, for a moment or two. Stephen Elliott, former Irish international, is with us as well. Stephen, what did you make of the final and England's approach in it?
Obviously, he started off with the three at the back, as he did in the Germany game. And I wasn't hugely surprised he went that way, obviously. And you could have said it was a perfect start for them, obviously, the way they got their opening goal. And I think actually shocked Italy a little bit. I think they were a little bit shell-shocked for the first 30, 25 minutes. And England really were very comfortable. And I don't know whether England missed a little bit of an opportunity there to kind of put them to the sword, even in the first half, if they had been a little bit more forward-thinking at times. But eventually, Italy kind of played their way into the game. And I think from about 35 minutes onwards, I just don't think England dealt with the energy the Italians had in an offensive kind of positions right up into the end of extra time. And yeah, it's probably, you're looking at even some of the substitutes made. Mancini recognised that he probably needed a bit of energy just after half time, and he wasn't afraid to make changes, whereas I felt Gareth Southgate didn't know whether to kind of stick or twist, and he ended up not really doing anything. And I know Guy mentioned there a couple of the lads, Saka, Rashford, Sancho, like these are lads that have pace, Grealish. We didn't see any of them until the 70th minute. And we're talking about age and defence, who, don't get me wrong, the Italian defenders defended really well, and they put themselves in positions where they don't really get caught out for pace very regularly. But I still think they could have had more questions asked of them if Southgate had been a little bit more kind of thrown caution to the wind. But listen, you can't fault England's efforts to get to a European final as a great achievement. But I think Italy, that know-how and kind of historically the nation itself knowing how to get the job done. They've won the World Cup four times, obviously won the European Championships as well. So I just think that kind of showed in the end. And the penalty shootout, that was a strange one for me to take kind of two experienced players off in the last minute. And I know obviously we can talk about attacking players coming on to hit penalties, but these boys are coming on into the biggest game of their lives, not touching the ball and then being asked to hit a spot kick for the kind of to win a tournament or to stay in a tournament. And I don't know, I think there's got to be a few questions asked for that. But as a whole, I've really enjoyed the tournament, and I do think the best team, like from the first Friday night, the opening evening in Rome, Italy showed they were probably the best team in the tournament, and England, they were well in second place.
Yeah, 1-1 after 90 minutes and extra time. Of course, Luke Shaw with the early goal for England, and a cracking finish it was too, and terrific ball to pick him out from Trippier as well, who was something of a surprise inclusion in England's starting 11. Benucci with the equaliser, of course, for Italy. James, look at football at that level, international level, it's all about fine margins, the little details, as Trapattoni used to say to the Irish media. And hindsight is always a great thing as well. So win, and you know, if you win the tournament, you're a tactical genius. If it had come off for Gareth Southgate, we wouldn't be having the conversation that perhaps we will be having today about, you know, did he get it wrong? Did he get it wrong in terms of the penalty takers, the order in which they were going to be taken? So looking back on the match as a whole and the tournament as a whole, if Gareth Southgate in the final had let the shackles off a little more, maybe introduced Grealish a little earlier, do you think they could have won? In other words, did he get it right on the night?
No, he didn't. I know he's admitted since that he was the one who chose the penalty takers and that, but like Stephen just said there, 2 minutes in, you're 1-0 up. Go at them. Like, they looked flustered. They didn't seem to realise where the ball had come from. You see Shaw, how much space Shaw got. The run he made from actually starting off the move from his own 18-yard box. I felt he should have gone after them, absolutely gone after them, and rattled Italy. And if he had have, I think it might have been a different result. They were on top of the game for 15, 20 minutes, and they didn't. I just didn't go anywhere with it. I felt putting the lads on at the end. There was about 5 minutes into the second half of extra time, Italy looked tired. And I thought, you know what, put Rashford on here, put Jaden on now, and go at them for 15 minutes. Don't take them on just to kick one shot. Let them have 10, 15 minutes on the pitch even to go at them. And I think that's where he failed more as a manager than he failed with the penalties. Because the penalties are, you're up against a goalkeeper like Donnarumma. As they went to take the penalties last night, we were sitting here watching the match, and Pickford and Donnarumma had a little chat with each other, and it's only then that you realise how big Donnarumma is. He's an absolute monster. So it's unfair on the players to go to that penalty. I think he should have made changes quicker, and if he had of, that wouldn't have gone to penalties last night, I don't think.
Yeah. Would you agree with that assessment, Guy, given what you said about, you know, England taking the positives out of it, that, you know, tactically and in terms of the England approach, that Gareth Southgate perhaps stands indicted on that? And yet, on the other hand, England throughout the tournament haven't been going after teams. I mean, you know, with the exception maybe of Ukraine. But, like, you know, it's been a conservative approach by and large, a cautious approach at times.
Absolutely. And up until last night, it had worked pretty well. So, yes, I do take on board the fact that possibly those substitutes should have come on in extra time. I think that that may have been an opportunity missed. But we've seen this before with England teams. When they score early and take the lead, they're not quite sure what to do with it. They did it in the World Cup semi-final against Croatia as well. So I feel for them a bit there. It's OK, we're one up. We're set up defensively. What do we do now? And yes, they should have maybe taken advantage of the fact that Italy were all over the place for that first 20 minutes. But I thought that they played really well. They created a few half chances. However, yes, when an ageing Italy team compared to the England team were there in extra time, possibly that is when the button should have been pushed earlier. But on the whole, I think that during the group stage, a lot of the critics were saying, oh, we're way too conservative when we drew 0-0 with Scotland. But it had worked right up until the final. So you can see why he stuck with what was working.
And again, I repeat, it's easy to be a wise guy in hindsight. But he did say afterwards, Gareth Southgate, the buck stops with me, I make the decisions. So obviously, we mentioned the fact that everything at international level, everything at club level, is analysed. So the order in which the penalty takers were staggered, you know, leaving Bukayo Saka to take that penalty seemed a bit odd. Even Roy Keane was questioning it on ITV. Here on RTE television, Liam Brady wondered aloud as well. Jose Mourinho, speaking to TalkSport, wondered, you know, where were the more experienced players, the Luke Shaws, the Sterlings and the Grealishes, you know, when England needed them. Now, look, as I said, it's easy to be wise after the event, but, you know, in fairness to a 19-year-old going up in a big tournament final to take a penalty of that magnitude, it was a huge ask.
It was a huge ask. That was the one that surprised me. I could see why Rashford and Sancho were taking the penalties. I also think that if Rashford's penalty had gone in, England would have probably won that penalty shootout. And it was the width of the post that somehow that seemed to knock the stuffing out of them, because Pickford saved two. You've got a feel for him. He did everything he could do on the night. Yeah. But yes, when you just saw Saka coming up to take that penalty and you thought, youngest player on the pitch, really? And yeah, I can see, yes, the buck does stop with South. He's gone out of his way to say, do not blame the players. I made that assessment on how they'd taken penalties in training, and it was my decision. But maybe Saka should have taken the first one, not the fifth. That certainly was a surprise, I think. I got the other two, but not that one.
Yeah, and obviously as well, Guy, a lot of talk today about social media, because there have been a few racist comments on social media and people have been condemning those actions. And, you know, you were mentioning earlier about, you know, taking the knee and what have you. But it's terrible once again that, you know, players have been subjected to that kind of abuse.
It's awful. It truly is, because the one thing that this England team has shown the country throughout this month is we're all in it together. Come on, this is England now. Get with it. Just update yourself, please. This is how England is these days. This is the England you support. And to suddenly reduce it to colour after a penalty shootout is depressing beyond words. And I hope that whoever has made these comments gets found, discovered, and punished accordingly, because we just don't have any time or room for that. I just don't get why people have to fall back on such stupid tropes.
Stephen, we really should celebrate Italy, shouldn't we? Worthy winners, fine side, 34 matches unbeaten. And credit, huge credit must go to Roberto Mancini, given the situation he inherited a few years back, having Italy not having qualified for the World Cup in Russia. What he has achieved in the last couple of years is remarkable, and he got his reward last night. Not just him, obviously, but you know the backroom team, Viali and Lombardo as well. A terrific side he's moulded. And I guess the big thing about Italy is it is very much a team.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think everybody has spoken, especially it's been kind of widely recognised over there, in the UK, how much togetherness was in the England squad. There was a lot of footage of them around St George's Park, kind of having fun in the swimming pool, having a little bit of crack together. But I think that's one thing that the Italians have in abundance as well. And Roberto Mancini, he's gone into this job now with, like you say, not qualifying for the World Cup in 2018, which is massive for a nation like Italy not to qualify for a World Cup tournament. But in the next tournament, to kind of to rally the troops and bring together a squad. And we're looking at the Italian squad. They've got some good players, but there's no outstanding stars in the squad where you'd say he's the go-to guy. Like, obviously, you've got the two centre-backs, two experienced lads, played a lot of football together, both at club and country. But still, there's no outstanding players. And for him to kind of get all them together, and a lot of the players as well, if you look at all the games over the tournament, Adrian, he's given a lot of minutes to the different players. Like, and there's some players that didn't even get on in the game that scored important goals. And I think he's utilised his squad really well. And that's something that maybe Gareth Southgate could look at, and I'm not saying Gareth Southgate done a terrible job, but maybe learn a little bit from somebody like Mancini, who was able to kind of recognise the qualities and use the right personnel at the right times. And I think it stems from him. I think I was reading something where when he was part of the 1990 World Cup squad in Italy, he never really got on the pitch himself, so he was wary of that as a player, and he wanted to make sure he kind of gave that togetherness to the squad where they all felt part of things. And I think it showed on the pitch and in the celebrations and some of the footage afterwards. And yeah, now you can't help but be happy for Italy. And obviously with the Giorgio Chiellini, the captain, he's everything about Italy. Obviously, he's making some fouls on the pitch where you're thinking, do you know what, he probably shouldn't be doing it, but you'd probably accept him if he's in your team. Even Jorginho, who possibly was lucky to stay on the pitch. But these are boys that just, they die for the badge. And I think they were fully deserving of winning the tournament overall if you look at all the games they've played.
Actually, that's a good point, James. Was Jorginho lucky to stay on the pitch?
Yes, no question, he was. I think the referee had a really, really good game last night. He let a lot of tackles flow. I think from looking at it from various angles, you see how close he is to the tackle. I think it's a case that he's looking at the way Grealish came into the tackle as well as the way Jorginho went into it. And I think if Grealish is on his feet when he goes to the challenge, Jorginho's off, there's no question. I think that's the only thing that saved him. I think it's the one thing he got wrong, I think, on the night, the manager or the referee. I think people can agree, VAR has been shown how to be used correctly during this tournament. They've used it really, really well. But that was one incident last night where it could have looked at it and probably would have sent off Jorginho if they had it.
Although there are some who would quibble about the semi-final and Sterling, the penalty, and VAR maybe not getting it. Anyway,
even at that, they still answered it quickly. They got to an answer on the decision quickly, which was something that fans of English football would say hasn't happened with VAR in their situation.
Guy, we know how powerful the English media can be, particularly, you know, what we used to call the red top newspapers. Any question over the future of Gareth Southgate in light of what happened? I know that may seem like a strange question to ask, given that they've come up just short, beaten on penalties in a European Championship final. But, you know, we've obviously been discussing the decisions made on the night. But do you think he has the support of the media, which is so, so important in England?
Basically. He in the two tournaments he's been in charge, we've got to the semi-final of the World Cup and the final of the European Championships. Yes, there is an awareness that perhaps he doesn't get everything right all the time. But where England have been, we talked about where Italy had been before Mancini came and joined. England were losing to Iceland in major championships before Gareth Southgate took over. And now we've been in the last four and the last two in the last two competitions. So his place is absolutely rock solid. Yes, questions will be asked, but not in a Gareth must go sort of way. More take this and learn and let's do better next time. So at the moment, the Red Tops are fully behind Gareth Southgate, despite losing on penalties, because he's done a good job.
James, you've been scouring the Red Tops. What are they saying today?
Yeah, it's quite interesting because I think most people, when you look back at these newspapers, a lot of people, especially if you're an England fan, will always remember the day or two after David Beckham got sent off against Argentina and the abuse that he got, not only from England fans, but the papers themselves. But if you look at it today, like Daily Mail, it's all end in tears. Daily Star kind of making a bit of a joke about it, saying, let's move on from football now, anybody for conquers. Guardian is so close. Daily Express, it hurts, but we're so proud of you. The I newspaper in London, Heartbreak, Independent, Tears for Heroes. So it's all that kind of stuff. Mirror again, Heartbreak, Daily Telegraph, The Ultimate Agony, Penalties, Heartbreak again. But it's all, they all realise how far this very young team have come and how devastating it must be for them and for all the backroom staff and for the English fans themselves. So it's much changed from many years ago, let's put it that way.
Well, commiserations to England. Congratulations to Italy. In terms, let's just broaden it out for a moment or two, lads. Your takeaways, you know, I think the great thing, Stephen, about a tournament like the European Championships is that, you know, teams emerge or, you know, some players emerge. I mean, not too many people outside of people maybe watching the Bundesliga would have heard of Patrick Schick, say, for instance, before the finals. And then he goes and scores that goal. And you got kids then maybe all around Europe, you know, mimicking that goal and, you know, mumbling his name as they try to chip an imaginary keeper. It's the beauty of tournament football that players emerged almost out of nowhere. Spinazzola for Italy, Locatelli, who came on as a sub in the final. But, you know, what were your magical moments? Or, you know, when you look back at a match, you say, oh, that was great, or a player that impressed you. What's your big takeaway?
To be honest with you, obviously you mentioned Donnarumma there, the Italian goalkeeper. He stood out for me, but I thought Federico Chiesa was outstanding in the tournament. I thought he was a real kind of he's a real go-to player for Italy. And even in the final, I think there last night, I think even when Italy were behind in the first half, when he was struggling, every time he still got on the ball, I felt like he had a leadership quality about him, and he kind of drove his team forward. And I think when he came off the pitch actually last night, it gave England a little bit of impetus for about 10-15 minutes where Italy struggled to get going on for a few minutes after he went off. For me, he was a big standout player. Obviously, there was other moments, like you mentioned, Stick, Czech, who had a quality tournament. Obviously, Ronaldo, he scored 5 goals, although he didn't do much, but he still finished with the golden boot, which probably tells you everything about Ronaldo. But now I just think as a whole, I think the tournament after the last 18 months we've had in the world, really, with the whole kind of COVID situation, lockdown, no supporters grounds. I think even when the games were in Budapest, the full houses, they were kind of standout moments for me after watching so many games without any supporters. And it was great to see the supporters back in. Obviously, the trouble was highlighted last night at the game, but that's a small minority, unfortunately, that kind of make a big noise. But now I just think as a whole, the tournament was a big success, and it was just great to have kind of that electric atmosphere back with players kind of reacting off supporters, and hopefully it may continue long into the future, and we're over the back of this COVID once and for all.
And of course, Guy, what a journey Denmark were on. All that happened, Christian Eriksen, you know, that opening day match for them with his teammates shielding him in Copenhagen in front of the home crowd. He's on the mend and we wish him well, but that was a very poignant day, wasn't it?
Oh, funnily enough, that's exactly what I was going to mention. The fact that after that awful, awful start, when you were thinking, is football worth it if this sort of thing's going to happen? The fact that he's recovered, and I think he was he certainly was offered tickets for Wembley, and I'm pretty sure he was there last night, so he is on the mend. But the way that the Danes then took up the challenge and get to the semi-finals and make all of these sort of dreams come true was remarkable. And I've really enjoyed this tournament. I'm not sure about travelling all round the continent to play it. I'm not sure that that's fair on some teams. As is mentioned earlier, England only had one away match. Wales, for instance, travelled just about everywhere. So I think that we need to look at that in future. But as well as watching that extraordinary Denmark turnaround, I also think we saw some of the amazing matches. That Magic Monday when we saw a 5-3 and a 3-all and penalties. just fabulous football. You don't usually see that in tournaments. You usually see gritty 1-0 victories. But we saw some champagne stuff, and I think there were some fabulous players. You mentioned Schick. Just on the English side, Raheem Sterling, I thought, had an absolutely magnificent tournament as well, and has really staked a claim as a world-class player, and would probably be in the team of the tournament as well. But it's been a joy to watch. It really has.
Okay. What stood out for you, James?
What stood out for me was Switzerland. I thought Switzerland were absolutely brilliant. Guys just mentioned it there. I think their penalties against France were five of the best penalties I think I've seen scored in a major tournament ever. They were just absolutely fantastic. They were just brilliant. I thought they gave a bit of a smile to everybody. They got to where they got to. And unfortunately, they had five great penalties. And then when they came up against Spain, they had probably the worst penalties they've ever taken. But that game, the France-Switzerland game, was a brilliant game. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, and a terrific tournament overall, Stephen. It's just a pity we weren't there.
No, that's it. You're watching it and you're kind of envious of all the kind of shenanigans going on, players celebrating and supporters kind of mixing and just enjoying the moment. And then you just think back to where we are at the minute, unfortunately, internationally, and it does seem like it could be a while again. We're kind of competing again in these competitions, but you have to stay positive and stay hopeful that our young kind of international players will hopefully kind of grow with the more experience they get, and we can be back competing, well, trying to compete, qualifying for these, because let's be honest, you want to be part of it rather than looking in from the outside.
Yeah, terrific tournament. Just before we wrap up things in terms of international football, Guy, just a word on Lionel Messi finally getting his hands on a major trophy with Argentina, winning the Copa America final against Brazil. And he has answered all those, you know, those people who say you can't be considered a true world great because, you know, he hadn't delivered for his nation. Well, he has now. Terrific achievement for Messi and for Argentina.
Absolutely. Because, yes, the one comparison with Maradona was Maradona had won World Cups, and Lionel Messi, not entirely, one man cannot make a team, but finally has an Argentina team who learnt how to cope very well in a tournament, and fantastic result to keep a clean sheet against Brazil in the final. As someone said mentioned earlier, it wasn't the world's greatest game, but Messi won't care. He now has an international medal to go with the enormous collection from club level. So it couldn't happen to great players. Deserve that. So I'm really pleased that in possibly the twilight of his career, he has finally picked up an international medal.
Yeah, James, I didn't get to see it, and Guy just mentioned it wasn't a great final, but you watched it. What was it like?
Yeah, it wasn't great. There was a lot of it could be classed as a typical Brazil-Argentina final. There was a lot of fouling, there was a lot of simulation, interspersed with some really, really good football, and the goal by Di Maria was an example of that. It was a really, really good goal. And then to top it all off, with 2 minutes to go in the match, Lionel Messi proves that he is human, gets one-on-one with the goalkeeper, stands on the football, misses the chance to wrap up the final. There's footballers around the world cheering that he actually missed it and thinking, you know what, it's not too bad now, lads. But he did, he proved he was human. It was great to see, though, at the end of the game with the trophies, the emotion from Messi, the fact that the entire squad sprinted towards him. He was very, very emotional at the end. He picked up player of the tournament, goal scorer of the tournament, highest assists of the tournament. And he had to obviously keep going up and back for these separate trophies that was given out on the night. But wonderful to see it. We saw it in the penalties in the semi-final, how emotional he was about the whole event. And now he is the best player in the world, no doubt. And he's up there with the greats, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. James, we'll leave that element of our podcast there right now. Guy, will you be able to just climb down now and get used to Premier League football in a few weeks' time after all of that?
It's going to be strange. I'm going to start it with a Coca-Cola, a sweet fizzy drink and a bacon sandwich to recover from overdoing it last night. And but yeah, it is going to be very strange going back to normal life after this. But that's the joy of football. We're what, a month away, and we'll be back with the Premier League, and off we go again on this journey. And we've only got a year to wait, of course, until the World Cup. So I think we'll recover.
Okay. And well done there on the product placement, little lad. You just crept it in there and then pulled it back out.
Other drinks.
Ronaldo wouldn't buy that one. Yeah, Ronaldo wouldn't buy that one. Anyway, listen, Guy, many thanks for joining us. And also thanks as well to Stephen Elliott. We'll move on now and we'll talk soccer in terms of European football and the clubs in the League of Ireland in action during the course of this coming week. We're joined by Mark Rossiter to discuss the Irish clubs in Europe, the League of Ireland scene. Actually, before we do that, Mark, the European Football Championships, we were chatting at length with Guy and Stephen there. Did you enjoy the tournament and what did you make of Italy's ultimate success?
Do you know what it is? In fairness, probably the best team, collective unit, won it. You know, I think the English team are a fabulous football team, but maybe scoring so early was a hindrance to them because they kind of just sat back and invited Italy onto them. And I thought Italy were the better team over the 120 minutes, to be honest.
And the best team in the tournament, Italy, yeah?
Yeah, I thought collective unit, I thought they were class. I really, really did.
Okay. Anything else stand out for you? You know, what did you enjoy other than, say, Italy and the final itself? Was there anything that stood out for you?
I really enjoyed watching Spain. The way that they play football, and I suppose it's probably the best crop of players they've produced since the likes of Xavi and Iniesta have retired. You know, Pedri from Barcelona is a talent, Ferran Torres from Man City. But, you know, they still have a way to go to challenge some of the big teams. And France were a huge disappointment, to be honest.
Okay. Right, let's focus on the Irish clubs in Europe. Shamrock Rovers 2-0 down to Slovan Bratislava, the return leg on Tuesday night. A bit of a tough one. Dundalk looking good in the conference. 4-0 up on Newtown of Wales after the first leg at Oriel Park. Duffy, McMillan, Will Patching and Han with the goals there. Bowes in a good position as well. Tyrek Wilson equalising for them in Iceland against Stjarnan. Sligo Rovers with a fair bit of work to do against FH of Iceland. 1-0 down from the first leg. Stephen Lennon scoring 5 minutes from time just after Greg Bulger received a red card for Sligo Rovers, so he'll miss the second leg. The Irish clubs up north, Linfield 3-1 down before the return leg with Zalgiris of Lithuania, that like Shamrock Rovers in the Champions League qualifiers. Glentoran 1, TNS 1. These are the results from last week. Mostar of Bosnia-Herzegovina, 2-1 winners over Coleraine. So Coleraine at home in the second leg. And Larne will take a 1-0 advantage into the home leg against Ballytown of Wales. But Mark, just first of all, Shamrock Rovers, you know, it's doable, but Slovan Bratislava are a quality side, 2-0 down. How do you see that?
They're an excellent team. I suppose the biggest positive is that Alan Manis saved the penalty late on. You know, taking the away goals out of it now, it puts them more on an even playing field with regards to, you know, they don't have to worry about Slovan scoring. They need to go and score goals. And look, they're quite capable in Tallaght. So Bradley will do his work. And, you know, I'd expect them to give a good goal. But if they can avoid, I suppose, conceding in the first half, they've got an opportunity.
James, do you give them a fighting chance at home?
I do, you know, like as Mark just said there, a good save by Alan Manis for a penalty, but also it's two mistakes that's cost the goals for Rovers as well. Like, it wasn't as if they're being absolutely pummeled. It's just one, unfortunately, Alan makes a mistake, and the other one, the defence just don't clear the ball effectively enough, and they get a goal from it. So they look at that and say, listen, lads, over the entire game, it's just these two little niggly mistakes that's cost us, and we're at home now. We can go out and play with how we need to play. Let's get a goal early, see how we get on from there on. Again, away goals now don't count, so it's all to play for. And I think if they get a good start, a good solid start tomorrow evening, they should be good set now. I'm not saying they'll win it, but Slovan are a very, very good outfit, but they'll give it one hell of a go anyway.
We've mentioned it a few times, Mark, on the podcast. You know, we've asked various people, but the away goals, the fact that they're abolished now, that they're not a factor, will you miss that element to European football? What do you think?
No, I like that it's gone, to be honest. Because, you know, teams can go and play with more freedom. And, you know, it's not, I suppose, the worst thing in the world if you concede at home now. You know, years ago we played against Hajduk Split and they beat us 1-0 here and it was huge. going back to play and, I suppose, beat a Croatian team over there. But now wouldn't be seen as such a bad thing. Not as bad. I know you're losing 1-0 at home, don't get me wrong. But no, I think it puts it more on an even playing field. The teams can just go and play for 180 minutes and, you know, take it from there.
Okay. In terms of Dundalk, let's take it, shall we, that Dundalk are safely through, 4-0 up, barring an absolute catastrophe. They'll progress, taking on Newtown in the return leg in Wales. Mark, Bohemians, you know, obviously they got an away goal, but it's still just 1-1 entering the second leg on Thursday at Dalyman Park. But that was a good result away from home, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were excellent. You know, they've, I suppose, probably been playing the best brand of football in the league in the last 2 months. And now they're getting the results to go with it. You know, like Tierney and Liam Burt have been brilliant. Ali Coote and, you know, up front, Georgie Kelly. So, no, they're clicking really well. It's just they're a young team and inexperienced in Europe, even though they played last year. They lost a couple of their players. They played in Hungary. So, look, I'd expect Bowles to go through. If they can put in any kind of performance, I'd expect them to win.
Yeah, what about Sligo Rovers, James? They've a battle on their hands now.
They have a battle on their hands. I know we mentioned it last week, I think with Gary, that half an hour, or they'd bet them on away goals, Dundalk did a couple of years ago. But it's only 1-0 down. And as you mentioned there, the goal only came after they were down to 10 men late in the game. They're a very good outfit. From what we saw against Dundalk, they were a very, very well-drilled outfit. But Sligo have been very, very good at home. And anything could happen in this game. 1-0... It isn't all over for Sligo. I can almost see them coming out of it, to tell you the truth. It's who they get in the next round, if they do qualify, is the difficult game. That's Rosenberg, so.
Not easy. Yeah, not easy. All right. Well, look, we'll see how it all plays out. Hopefully all of the League of Ireland sides will progress, but that's a big ask as well. Let's turn our attention to the League of Ireland scene. So just given that the other clubs were involved in European action, just a handful of games over the course of the weekend. St Pat's moved level with Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers at the top of the table after a 1-0 win over Derry City at Richmond Park. Chris Forrester with the only goal. Pat's also had Jamie Lennon sent off, so another red card for St Pat's. We'll hear from the Derry boss Rory Higgins very shortly. Derry, by the way, of course, have announced a deal to sign Patrick McElhinney from Dundalk. The announcement of that and the timing of it certainly irked Vinnie Perth. As I say, we'll hear Rory Higgins and his perspective on that very shortly. But first, Alan Matthews of Pats on an important win for his team.
Delighted with the 3 points and delighted with the way the players dug in and fought really, really hard for each other to make sure that we kept a clean sheet in the second half. Our quality at times was exceptional. And our work rate and application was also exceptional. So delighted with that. We came into the game knowing that we needed to respond from a reverse result last week, and we did. We took the initiative, we got a goal relatively early on. Perhaps if we're being critical, we could have pushed on, but we didn't. And Derry are a good side. And then to go down and play the last half hour or so with 10 men against the side who are going to work you, I just thought that we played clever. We played with real heart and desire and no little skill. When we got possession of the ball, we did really well. So the players can be very, very, you know, happy and pleased with the performance tonight. And we're absolutely delighted that we kept good shape and ended up getting a good result at the end of it.
Again, though, a player sent off and makes life difficult for yourselves. That's four sends off now in the last three games. Can you put your finger on why that's happening?
We're not a dirty team, for the first thing I'd have to say, we're not. But maybe we need to be a little bit clever. Some of those yellow cards could have been avoided if we maybe had put the brakes on and made a decision to maybe stay on our feet instead of going committed to the ball. Alfie, I felt, was very unlucky to be sent off in Waterford, as was Lee last week. Ian got two yellow cards and got the red. And Jamie tonight, he was playing in a, you know, I wouldn't say an alien position for him, but he was playing in a strange position for him, and he did terrific when he was on. And it was just his enthusiasm to go and try and see if he could win a ball, and maybe he was a little bit more experienced, might have just put the brakes on and held his ground because he'd already been booked. So no fault with any of the yellow, red cards rather that we've got, but we just need to be a little bit cleverer maybe as we play these games.
Rory, how do you sum that one up tonight?
Disappointing. Don't think there was an awful lot in the first half, and we've had a good chance with Junior early on, and then I think on the stroke of half time we've had a good chance from a set play. And when you get chances like that presented to you at Inchicore and difficult venues, then you've got to take them to expect to get anything out of the game. But then second half, 57 minutes in, they go down to 10 men, and you're thinking we can win the game. You're not thinking taking a point, you think we can win the game. But we became flat and lethargic, and our movement ahead of the ball wasn't good enough. And to be a top side that we aspire to be, then that's that, for me, it's just it's not the level that it needs to be at. And attacking players should be rubbing their hands in them situations, and midfield players should be rubbing their hands, and everyone should be rubbing their hands and thinking there's an opportunity for us here. But as I said, I just felt it was a bit flat, and we need to improve.
First chance we've had to speak to you as well since the announcement that Patrick McIlhenny will be joining the club. How pleased are you to get that one over the line?
Yeah, delighted. Obviously, Patrick's at a point in his life as kids and his partner moving back to Derry, and he's keen to join the club. And as commitment to Dundalk can't be in question at all. If you look at his performance last night, if you look at his performance against us the previous week, I thought he was Dundalk's best player over the two games. And he's a real professional. Listen, we're delighted that in future seasons he's going to be back at the Brandywell.
I'm sure you picked up on Vinnie Perth's reaction to it as well. He obviously it drew a pretty angry response from him when the club announced it last night. He accused the club of showing a lack of respect, of being disgraceful, in fact. Yeah. What is your response, your reaction to that?
This is the way it is. So Wednesday, speculation was rife, and the whole country was talking about him coming to Derry. Wednesday, we could have put it out, but we didn't, because Dundalk were playing in Europe on the Thursday. And then one of our local journalists was going to run with the story Friday morning. Anyway, he got wind of it. Everyone knew it was happening. So the only window for the club to announce it, and the club should always announce things like that, was after the game. There's no great time to announce them sort of things, but the club, I'm sure, would rather put it out there than a local journalist, because they should be in control of the situation. I had an amazing time at Dundalk, a lot of good friends, a lot of brilliant memories, and the last thing I want is to get into a dispute with Dundalk's manager, because I have too much respect for the club, and I wouldn't do that. But we were although Dundalk are in a difficult situation, we were in a difficult situation because the story was breaking anyway.
I don't want to dwell on it too long, but he did have a particularly pointed attack at you as well. Did that surprise you?
No, didn't surprise me, no.
Ooh, there you go. That's Eric White with the questions to Rory Higgins, the Derry manager. What do you make of that little squabble that's going on there, Mark?
Very interesting to hear, actually. Look, I don't know if there's beef between the two of them or there's not, but with regards to Patrick and in this league, I don't think Derry are too bothered about Dundalk. I think they're looking at it as a positive for them for next season to build, you know. When you look at some of the players that they've had, like Paddy McCourt through the years and stuff like that, Patrick is the best player that Derry have produced. He arguably played his best football when he was at Derry. So for them, they're probably looking at it as a huge positive for next season, not to take a dig at Dundalk, really, to be honest.
Yeah, and it is a huge positive, isn't it, James, for your team, Patrick McIlhenny, back at the Ryan McBride Brandywell?
Yeah, it is a positive once you can keep him fit and get his head in the game. It's a massive positive. I'm not 100% sure I agree with Rory there about the club having to put it out when they put it out. I'm not too sure. Like, if it was running Friday, it wasn't going to go into the paper, I don't think, until Saturday, maybe. So they could have waited a couple of days or maybe even a couple of hours and explained to Dundalk why they were going to put it out before they did. I'm not 100% sure about why they put it out that quickly. But yeah, it's a great positive to have him back. The only negative so far this season is Will Patchen going back to Dundalk, because I think he's been absolutely superb for Derry. He's shown the type of player he is. But on Friday night's game, again, he mentioned it, but 30 minutes against 10 men, and they only really created one chance, which came off the crossbar. But a difficult time. I think he's starting to go in the right way. He's starting to put his team together that he wants for next season already. And that's a good sign for Rory. There was obviously some kind of niggle between himself and Vinny prior to this that he didn't seem so shocked. So that's an interesting story that will surely bubble under for the rest of the season.
Okay, the other results over the course of the weekend: Longford Town 1, Drogheda United 1. a precious point for Longford Town. Chris Lyons gave Drogheda the lead after 14 minutes. Dylan Grimes with the equalising goal 14 minutes from time. And at Finn Park, a disappointing result for Finn Harps, beaten by a goal to nil by Waterford. Junior Quatrina scoring the winner with a first half penalty on his debut for the Blues. And that's a significant result, isn't it, Mark, for Waterford? It just tightens things up at the bottom of the table, because as it stands, we've Longford at the bottom on 10 points, just ahead of them, well, not just ahead of them, a fair bit ahead of them, on 16 points, Waterford. But Waterford have now closed to within 4 points of Finn Harps, who are on 20 points. So it's getting a little bit hairy now for Harps again, isn't it?
Yeah, and like considering the way that they were the first six games of the season, I seen them against Drogheda up in Finn Park, 10 days ago, and I was so disappointed with them, especially when they took the lead. Just sat back, even when they went 2-1 down, they were just sitting back and looking to hit on the counter-attack. You know, this was a team at the start of the season, the way that they were going, you thought that Finn Harps were just going to be away from it and maybe sitting in mid-table with possibly a European push, but they've gone the complete opposite way, and Waterford have gained a lot of traction after the break, and Bertram coming in has done really, really well, and they're picking up points and moving away from Longford, but also dragging Finn Harps right back into it.
It's going to be fascinating at the bottom, isn't it, James? It's just getting that little bit tighter now.
Yeah, it is. Like, there's only about 8 points between the bottom four or so teams, so like we're over halfway through the season now. It'll be interesting. He said, I'm very upset for Ollie because they got off to such a good start. But as Mark said there, like if you're taking leads in game, you need to push on instead of setting back and letting people come on to you. It'll be interesting. I think Vinny's going to get Dundalk kicking after this European run, so they'll push away. So it will be those bottom three, I think, Finn Harps, Waterford, Longford. But Mark Burcham mentioned, I think it was after the Bowes game, how much trouble they were in as far as signing players, getting players through COVID, etc. So he's eventually getting the players he wants on the pitch, and the results are starting to show.
Okay, just to run through the results from the first division over the course of the weekend. Shelburne, the clear leaders, of course, held to a 1-1 draw by Treaty United. Shells were looking good for all 3 points. They led thanks to a goal from Michael O'Connor, but William Armshaw popped up with an equaliser in the 94th minute for Treaty, who are going very, very well. But it's Galway who lie in second place. They closed the gap to 9 points on Shelburne with a 2-0 win against Cove Ramblers. Rory Keating and Wilson Wawaru with the goals there. All square between Cork City and Bray Wanderers, 2-2. Cabinteely 0, Athlone Town 1, and UCD 2, Wexford 1. And it's extremely tight, of course, in the Women's National League. But Piemont got back to winning ways, beating Bowes by 2-0. Áine O'Gorman scoring both goals. That result means, because obviously Shelburne weren't in action at the weekend, but it means that Piemont go top of the table, above Shelburne on goals scored. It's that tight. The side's level on goal difference and points after 11 games, but it's goals scored. That means that Piemont topped the Women's National League. Elsewhere, third place Wexford Youths kept up the chase at the top of the table with a 3-1 win at Athlone Town, and DLR Waves cemented their hold on a top four place as they edged out Cork City 1-0. Kira Maher with the only goal, and it ended 2-2 between Treaty United and Galway. That was the full-time score, 2-2. Just a word, Mark, on the First Division. Look, we were talking about Dundalk and 4-0 up going into a second leg, but Shelburne coasting clear at the top of the table. It's hard to see them not claiming automatic promotion, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I was talking to Paul Skinner going into the Treaty game, and everybody's worried about playing Treaty because they work so hard. It's 4-4-2. And it was a brilliant goal, actually, that scored. You see the keeper just, you know, they've obviously got a set piece and they're putting it in, and the keeper's running back. And your man just sticks it in the top corner. It was a great strike. But I still think it's a positive for Shells to go down there and not lose. But yeah, I'd expect them to be home and hosed. I really, really would. I can't see them losing it from there.
Okay, listen, lads, we leave it there. Mark, many thanks for joining us. Mark Rossiter joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. And James, until next week, we'll chat then from all of the team. Best of luck to all our clubs in Europe this week from all of us on the RT Soccer Podcast. Until the next time, bye-bye.